chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make heaven in the middle of it. Rest make heaven in the middle. We are rest make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot going on today. Monday, a week ago, there was a raid on former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home there in Florida. And there's a bunch of hullabaloo going on now, and they're saying that he might have even a classified document in there or whatever. But they've negotiated over the last 6 months with the federal government on those documents, and they even asked him at one time to put a lock on there. But here's what Ron Paul had to say about it in a recent interview.
All right, let's bring in Rand Paul, Kentucky Senator, Republican Senator. Good morning to you, Senator.
Good morning.
Good morning. So the White House is saying that, thanks for coming on, that they believe that the president learned about it, or they know that the president learned about it when we all did, when it was reported in the news. But Trump on Truth Social wrote this: Biden knew all about this, just like he knew all about Hunter's deals. Do you think that if the AG is involved and the director of the FBI are giving the go-ahead, do you think the president knew?
You know, I think this is an attack on our constitutional republic. I think it's an attack on the rule of law. This is the FBI being used as a political weapon against your opponents. And do I think the director of the FBI knew? Absolutely. Do I think the attorney general knew? Absolutely. I can't vouch for how far it went up, and they may have tried to keep the White House at arm's length, but I wouldn't be surprised if the White House knew. But I can tell you I'm not surprised with Christopher Wray. I've challenged him before on whether or not it's constitutional to allow foreign intelligence warrants to be used against Americans. You'll remember when they spied on Trump to begin with, it was a foreign intelligence court and warrant. And this is not really the same constitutional standard as the Fourth Amendment. And so they don't have to prove probable cause. And it was a terrible thing that we allowed to happen in our country. And it should never be used against a Republican or a Democrat candidate. But he allowed that and agrees with that. So I'm not surprised that he also would allow something like this to happen. But this is, it's demoralizing for the country, and it takes away so much faith in our law enforcement to say, oh my goodness, they're going to use the FBI to go after people they disagree with politically. This is a sad moment for our country.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. But the thing is, I like to know what the warrant says, number one. Number two, I would like to know if does the Department of Justice understand it's in their best interest to start speaking out? They're overwhelming any message that you think Democrats want to talk about with these bills passing. This is smothering everything. Do you think it's incumbent on them, not hopeful, but do you think it's incumbent on them to speak out today or tomorrow and say, what were you doing?
Without question, I think the order to allow the raid on Mar-a-Lago on Trump's house has to be revealed. I think we have to know, you know, under what pretense they think this is right. I think it's going to have to wait till November till there's a full investigation. And I've never been a fan of overusing impeachment, but I think there has to be an investigation. And if it warrants it, there's going to have to be a look at whether or not the attorney general has misused his office for political purposes. Have they gone after a political opponent? I mean, this is beyond the pale. No one would have ever imagined before that we would be using, or one political party would be using the FBI to attack their political opponents. Now, this is really something that's going to require investigation, and I wouldn't be surprised if the investigation leads to abuse of power, that this could even lead to an impeachment of the Attorney General.
Wow. Meantime, Senator, the White House is set to admit more migrants after DHS ends Trump's Remain in Mexico policy. All this as Texas Governor Greg Abbott continues to bus migrants to blue cities. At this point, Senator Paul, what is left to deter these migrants from entering our country illegally? Seems like there's nothing left.
You know, I think it draws attention to it by sending them to New York, and so attention is drawn to all these people flooding into the country. But ultimately, we have to do this. We have to change our laws and or court opinions to get to the point where if you come in illegally, you're sent immediately back. I think the system should be such that if you're caught illegally crossing, you're picked up and immediately deposited on the other side. Nobody's allowed to enter illegally. We don't have them come in. We don't have all these long court process. If you're caught in the commission of entering the country illegally, you should be sent back. Combined with that, though, is I'm not anti-lawful immigration, and I'm actually for more work permits. I'm for more lawful immigration. I have many good friends who came here. My town is full of great people who came here who immigrated lawfully. So I'm for more of that. And I think we actually could have more of that lawfully, but we can't have any. I would send everybody back, but right now they won't let you. I mean, even under the Trump administration, we had remain in Mexico, which was something we agreed to with Mexico, but still people crossing the border weren't remaining in Mexico. We weren't really able to send people back. I would send everyone back 100% until they get the idea that you can't come in illegally, line up at the official port of entry, and guess what? If you do it lawfully, I think we can actually admit even more lawful people than we do now.
Ducey with Fox asked Jean-Pierre, the press secretary, about this raid. Did the White House know about it? And here's what was said, and that's followed by an interview with Paxton, the Attorney General of Texas. So here we go next.
Do you have a reaction to this? And did you know about it?
Is this administration weaponizing the Justice Department and the FBI against political opponents?
No, I'm answering the question, and I'm telling you that we are not going to comment on a criminal investigation. We are not going to comment from here, from this White House.
The White House is denying the president knew about the FBI raid of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home ahead of time. But former President Trump isn't buying it, saying Biden knew all about this just like he knew about Hunter's deals. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton joins me now. Attorney General, good morning to you. We do know that this decision to raid Trump's home went up the food chain. The question is just how far up it went. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, we know that the Attorney General had to make this decision. This is such a big decision. This is a step that we've never seen the Department of Justice take, I don't think, in the history of our country. And so it definitely wouldn't surprise me if Biden himself didn't know. Certainly the people around him knew, and they certainly didn't stop it from happening and probably were very involved in making it happen.
Well, there's been some suggestion that the FBI could have, you know, just so happened to have collected some documents unrelated to the National Archives and documents that could be related to January 6th during their raid. Do you think that's what this is really all about?
You know, I don't know. I think that they are trying to find something on the president. They clearly view him as a threat to their future plans, their liberal future plans. And so whether it's January 6th or whether it's something else, the FBI and the Department of Justice are out there looking for an angle. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, and there's so many questions about that search warrant. And apparently Trump's legal team could answer some of them because they apparently have a copy of the search warrant, but they're not going to make it public at this time. Why do you think that is?
You know, I think they're just trying to figure out how they're going to deal with this. They don't have all the information that they would like to know about what the Department of Justice is doing. I'm sure there was not a lot of cooperation between the Department of Justice and the president. And so, you know, they're holding as much information as they can so that they can make the right decisions at the right time.
There's also the FBI that didn't allow Trump's lawyers, apparently, in the rooms that they were searching. Using your legal experience, does that sound above board to you?
You know, I don't know that that's untypical, but this whole thing with raiding the president's house, the timing of it, the fact that he may be about to announce for president, especially when you look at it in comparison to what happened with Hillary Clinton and the information that she had on her servers and the fact that she destroyed information. You look what's going on with Hunter Biden and his father and how you don't see either of them ever raided, and yet here we are with President Trump getting ready potentially to announce for president, and suddenly, you know, the FBI and the Department of Justice are all over him. It seems very political, and it's, in my opinion, extremely concerning because now you have a government trying to affect the political environment where, in my opinion, that should be the people, not the federal government, not law enforcement.
It's a double standard that's hard to ignore. Also, Attorney General, want to get you on this. New York City Mayor Eric Adams is firing back at the governor of your state, Greg Abbott, for sending migrant buses to the Big Apple. And now Adams says he might send a bus of his own to Texas. Listen here.
I am deeply contemplating taking a busload of New Yorkers to go to Texas and do some good old-fashioned door knocking because we have to, for the good of America, we have to get him out of office.
Sir, your response to that?
Look, you know, he's free. This is a free country, so he's certainly free to try to come down and influence Texas politics. My guess is he's not going to have a lot of impact. But Governor Abbott's done a great job. He's been the governor for almost 8 years, and I think he'll be reelected overwhelmingly.
30 seconds more to you on this last one. Remain in Mexico policy officially over. How much of an impact will this have on the southern border?
That's a dramatic impact. That was a very effective policy by the Trump administration. It brought the numbers down in a major way, and now with the Biden administration letting that go, it's having a dramatic impact. You can see it in the numbers from when Trump was in office and to where we are now. And obviously the Biden administration wants illegal immigration, and they're working with the cartels hand in hand to make sure it happens.
5,500 illegal immigrants waiting in Mexico apparently will now be allowed into the United States. Attorney General Ken Paxton, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Here's a former FBI agent's reaction to this raid, and it's bringing in just just tremendous criticism about what went on. And Garland, during this week, later this week, did admit to authorizing the search warrant. But here we go with some insight from former agents.
I want to get to read now from former FBI investigator Bill Daley. Bill, just walk us through from your past experience. What do you think what sounds consistent with what you understand, or what maybe stands out?
Well, certainly my experience wouldn't apply to this because of the unique nature of what's going on here. But I will give you my view from having worked in law enforcement and also been kind of on the civilian side where we get involved in civic and cases. A couple of things jump out to me, Charles. You know, first of all, the search warrant appears to be very broadly written. So if you read it, it kind of basically says all of Mar-a-Lago is perhaps searchable depending upon where the President of the United States would spend his time, where he would travel to, what he had access to. So it wasn't just confined, appears, to the storage area and maybe one or two locations. The other thing is that the big question here, and I think, some of the panelists touched on earlier, but I'd like to reiterate, the fact is, what really happened here? What transpired? So we've gone from being where there are some, private records that the president was saying he was holding on to and discussions back in June and seemed to be somewhat I'm not going to say amicable. That's been characterized by several people being amicable and other people saying nothing about it. But I'd probably say there was discussions going on, but there's nothing that's happened since that time. So the question is, did this search kind of surface out of those discussions? These seem to be related to these high-level national security documents, which, apparently were not ones that were, subpoenaed, otherwise have been turned over back in June. So did they deal with the National Archives or with some other issue at hand here? And why wasn't this flagged to the president or his attorneys before showing up with a search warrant? So there are a couple of things here that are kind of still, we're trying to read tea leaves and kind of discern things from planet alignment, which gets very difficult. But there are some concerning issues here with regard to why wasn't the president or his team asked for these documents? And if they were, can the government demonstrate that they asked and that was rebuffed in some way?
Yeah, and of course, the president's been out of office. Former President Trump has been out of office for a long time now. And, the whole thing, you just wanted the entire sense of urgency and the need to be this sort of ham-fisted or heavy-handed with the number of agents. The middle, it was dark, it was a morning, President Trump wasn't there. It just doesn't pass a smell test, if you will.
Yeah, I would probably say, Charles, I mean, if you're going to conduct let's put aside being the former president for a second, because it does actually, the things you just mentioned kind of come into play, but to bring a number of FBI personnel, evidence response people to collect information in such a large property, you would need people to do that. I think, really going to go back to really what the predicate of this is, which is to your point, even, you know, why now after several years of not being in office, why did this rise to that level of such an urgency and concern that they couldn't be asked for those or couldn't have called the president's team up in Bedminster and say, hey, can you meet us down there? And we'd like to get a hold of these documents because we're concerned of their safety or their well-being. What else is happening? Something else that's kind of struck me the other day, it came from the White House during one of the White House briefings. The White House spokesperson, when she mentioned the fact that the White House doesn't comment on any ongoing criminal investigations. Now, whether that was a kind of a slip Mahoneyism or whether that was something that they were tied into, you know, I didn't get anywhere along the way here that up to perhaps the violations have been listed in the warrant with regard to what these documents, may have as far as a legal vulnerability, right. But haven't heard anything regarding kind of legal aspects to this. Was it just an effort to retrieve these documents for safekeeping because of the high level of security needed around anything to deal with either nuclear or other national security issues? Or was there something else afoot here? And again, why wasn't they asked for? And if they were asked for, I think people would like to know that they were asked for. And if they were rebuffed, then we'd like to know that.
And it keeps coming back to the affidavit and really, truly trying to understand, why this all went down. What was the sense of urgency? And again, is it a criminal investigation? Is it a national security investigation? Or is it just a fishing expedition? Bill, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Larry Kudlow interviews next John Ratcliffe, the former National Intelligence Director. And he has some very, very insightful things to say about the weaponizing of these agencies and so forth. But here we go with that.
Joining me now, my favorite intel guy, my absolute number one favorite intel guy, John Ratcliffe, former director of Intelligence and former Texas Congressman. John Ratcliffe, welcome back. First of all, I want to ask you, what is the rules here? Don't presidents have the power to declassify? And don't you suspect that most of this stuff in this inventory that we're never going to see or we're not going to see right away was declassified? I mean, and related to that, John, this whole business of, you know, top secret and all the rest of it. I mean, is this a mountain out of a molehill or what?
So the president does have ultimate declassification authority. He can literally declassify, and President Trump, of course, had that authority and could declassify anything he want while he was president. But I think what a lot of folks haven't really focused on here, Larry, as you talk about these stories, is, you know, when this all broke earlier this week, I thought, surely this is not about classified documents and the president being in possession of those. It has to be more than that, because the Department of Justice and the FBI have already set a standard that makes it virtually impossible to prosecute a case like that. And, you know, as I listened to Merrick Garland at his press conference yesterday say that President Trump is entitled to even-handed treatment of the law, I think President Trump's lawyers today would say, great, treat us exactly like you treated Hillary Clinton. Because if you remember, Larry, what the standard is, as people talk about Espionage Act and classified documents and all of that, the standard was set in 2016. Remember, the Department of Justice and the FBI took the official position that Hillary Clinton, who was in possession of classified documents, including secret, top secret, sensitive, compartmented information outside of a secure facility, that in possession of that wasn't enough, and that being grossly negligent and being careless, Jim Comey told us, that's not enough under the Espionage Act. You have to know that you're violating the law, and that he couldn't prove that Hillary Clinton knew she was violating the law, therefore she couldn't be charged. Well, so even if you assume the worst case scenario for President Trump, that there are classified documents in his possession at Mar-a-Lago, that only puts him where Hillary Clinton was. Mm. And what the FBI and the Department of Justice would have to show was that he knew the documents were there and he didn't think that they were declassified. He's already said publicly that he thinks that they were all declassified. So, you know, the Department of Justice and the FBI really have a problem here based on the Comey standard and what they have done, the precedent they have set. And I think that Donald Trump's lawyers will say, treat us exactly like you treated Hillary. You can't charge us with any crimes.
So didn't the FBI, look, they were there in June. By all accounts, it was cordial. It was cooperative. President Trump himself appeared, offered his services. They wanted a bigger lockbox. They got one. They wanted better video surveillance. They got that or whatever it was. The guests basically got everything. Then there's this two-month gap, and then all of a sudden they show up barging in with this outrageous raid. I mean, I just wondered, didn't they already see what was in President Trump's possession? Didn't they see the documents? I mean, if they wanted stronger locks, John Ratcliffe, on the storage bin, I presume they saw what was in the storage bin.
Right. They had access, by all accounts. There was a complete cooperation there, so they would have had a chance, you know, to see the documents that were in there. And they left and said, look, we need a stronger lock, which, you know, goes back to another point, Larry, in terms of what's taken place here. You know, the allegation, I guess, is that, you know, Donald Trump had classified documents on the premises. Compare that to Hillary Clinton, who had classified documents in a server that Jim Comey admitted was accessed by a foreign adversary. So her conduct was far, far worse, and yet she wasn't charged, couldn't be charged. Remember famously Jim Comey saying no reasonable prosecutor could bring this case based on that. So, you know, absolutely. I think, you know, to your point, though, about the FBI, you know, having access to this months ago, I mean, this is an FBI that doesn't come in with clean hands. This is, you know, the same FBI director that did an exoneration memo of Hillary Clinton 2 months before she was ever interviewed is the same FBI director that, you know, opened up an investigation into a Russiagate when he'd already been briefed on the intelligence that it was Hillary Clinton's campaign that had started those allegations. So that has continued through the FISA abuse, filing false affidavits with the court. So, you know, very clearly, I think that, you know, this is a continuation of that. And it's why they went in with the most heavy-handed way they could do, you know, executing a search warrant for documents that they knew were there and could have simply asked for.
I mean, according to one of the reports in Politico, one of the charges, one of the investigatory charges, I'll amend that, is that Donald Trump was committing espionage. I mean, really? Donald Trump's going to commit. For what reason is Donald Trump, who ran on America First, who, and while he was president, by the way, there was no Vladimir Putin invasion of anything. The Abraham Accords, he cut the treaty with Iran. He was tough on China, rang the bell about the China threat for the whole world to see, and cut a tough trade deal that had at least some reciprocity for a change. Donald Trump is going to commit espionage, commit spying? Really? I mean, where does that come from?
Well, Larry, why does that surprise you? I mean, these are some of the same folks at the Department of Justice and the FBI who accused him of being a Russian agent. They've been accusing him of espionage for 6 years. So it's a continuation of that. And it's why, frankly, you know, more than half of Americans don't believe, you know, when Merrick Garland says Donald Trump's going to be treated fairly, he's going to get even-handed treatment under the law, they simply don't believe it, because the precedent is time and time again when it has come to Donald Trump, he has been treated unfairly. He's been treated, you know, to a different standard. And in this case, if he gets treated under the same standard, you know, under the Espionage Act, again, there's no basis to bring any charges here, because the Department of Justice and the FBI said 6 years ago, you got to be able to prove intent. He's already denied that he had the intent to do it. So,
you know, I believe the former president said today or yesterday the whole thing's a hoax, this Mar-a-Lago business. I'm just reading here, John. Russian collusion fraud, there's a hoax. The Steele dossier, another hoax. Misleading FISA request for this Carter page, that was another hoax. The Mueller whitewash, another hoax. There's other hoaxes. The Muslim ban was a hoax. The WikiLeaks connection was a hoax. The Trump Tower meeting with Russian lawyers was a hoax. The Russian server at the Trump Tower was a hoax. Kids in cages was a hoax. I mean, you know, there's a pattern here that people will say anything. Democrats will say anything. And now it looks like, you know, since they've taken over the Justice Department, they're going to say anything.
Well, so the problem there is, of all those things that you read off, Larry, and American people have seen this, is the common denominator with all of those things is they have all worked against Donald Trump and or Republicans for the last 6 years. Look, the FBI, for instance, has had problems going back to J. Edgar Hoover. Everyone gets that. But those problems were often institutional, that were related to keeping their own power, all of that. What's different now, Larry, and why the American people are so upset and so outraged is for the last 6 years, instead what they've seen is from the FBI and the Department of Justice is essentially the FBI acting as the muscle or the strong arm of the Democratic Party. It's partisanship, as opposed to just abuse of power. And, you know, the American people have seen that from all of the things that you've laid out one after another. Always some explanation or excuse for why Donald Trump would be treated differently or Republicans would be targeted, all of those things. And I think that's why poll after poll now shows, unfortunately, that Americans have lost faith and trust in a very important institution like the FBI and in the Department of Justice, and why they think the country's on the wrong track, and why they think that the party that's been in control of those things ought to be taken out of power.
I mean, you know, John, if I get a factoid or two, I might change my mind. But I got to tell you, my instincts here, I mean, this espionage thing is just off the charts. But you're right. He's been accused of spying before. So it's just silly, nonsensical stuff. This here is a fishing expedition. It's connected to January 6th and all those investigations. But most of all, the Democrats want to keep him off the ballot. And they will do anything. And they will weaponize any part of the administration and the executive branch to keep him off the ballot in 2024. That's the way I see it. One big hoax-ridden fishing expedition. Okay? That's my take.
Regardless of all that, Larry, all President Trump would say is, apply the same standards to me that you applied to Hillary Clinton, and I'm good with that. You couldn't charge her. You can't charge him under espionage or any of the obstruction charges that are supposedly out there. So
that's why you're the diplomat, John. You put that so elegantly. That's why you're the diplomat. Anyway, John Ratcliffe, thank you, former dean.
It's getting more heated. Steve Bannon, there's been talk this week of an assassination aimed towards the former president, Trump. So anyway, this is very dangerous talk out here. And some people are hypothesizing that to get rid of Trump, they may consider that. And Steve Bannon broached this on one of his programs just recently. We have that clip now.
I do not think it's beyond this administrative state and their deep state apparatus to actually try to work on the assassination of President Trump. I think everything's on the table. I think his security ought to be at the highest it's ever been. And honestly, I think he ought to, and I think he should have flown down to Mar-a-Lago this morning, walked out there at noon today and said, hey, I'm running for president of the United States. Suck on that.
If you remember back in 2016, when right before he got elected, I was in Washington, D.C. I was at a couple different social events, and I heard people talking. They said the Democrats want this guy so bad that they wouldn't put assassination behind it. And I'm going to tell you something. They've tried impeachment. They've tried another impeachment. They've tried one investigation after another. This is about one thing. This is about stopping him from running in 2024. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm not into conspiracies. I'm not into anti-government rhetoric. This is the first time in my lifetime that I would say I am deathly afraid for Donald Trump. I would not put assassination behind these people.
The country is entering a very, very dangerous period, and this talk of assassination has come up in the last week or so. So we had JFK, that they got rid of him because he got in the way of their plans, and Trump has done that also. I think one of the main problems they had with Trump was he stopped them from plundering the U.S. Treasury with all these different corrupt people that have their hands in the till. And so he got in the way. He wasn't a team player. And I think deep down Trump has a streak of love for this country, a deep love for this country also. So I think these are some of the the reason why they don't want him back in politics. But coming up next is Hannity. He covers a lot of different things, and he covers this raid on Mar-a-Lago also. But he's really insightful in several different aspects of what's going on. So here we go with that.
Welcome to Hannity. We have a lot coming up tonight. Roger Stone will join us with more on these pre-dawn raids, in this case at his home. Oh, with fake news CNN cameras. How did they get tipped off? Along with the very latest details from America's partisan two-tiered system of justice. But tonight we begin with a Fox News alert breaking right now. One individual with access to the FBI search warrant used at Mar-a-Lago is revealing new details to this show tonight about that document. And tonight we can exclusively report that the warrant identified two very vague categories of interest. One, documents that should or could be in the National Archives. And two, anything else that might be marked classified. It was actually that general. Now, Mr. Garland, let's see the affidavit that you presented to the Trump-hating, Obama-loving, Jeffrey Epstein's friend's defender, magistrate, because the list of what they took was kind of also vague and meaningless. So the affidavit, what you did to get this warrant, you took responsibility today. We'd like to see it. And I said on day one that this was one big, giant fishing expedition. I believe this was all a pretext, and they were looking for any and all documents at Mar-a-Lago. It is official. We're now fully immersed in yet another anti-Trump witch hunt. Now, you show me the man, we'll find the crime. Now, you can accept they never, ever seem to find the crime in the case of Donald Trump, because one doesn't exist. And by the way, what they took was meaningless, seemingly, what we know now. And at the same time, Joe Biden and his son Hunter are, well, they're enjoying a lavish vacation at an exclusive island in South Carolina. Yesterday, the father-son duo, they were all smiles as they, but look at Hunter boarding Air Force One, you're paying for it. Not a single care in the world. No worries about a pre-dawn raid at his house. Despite, let's see, pictures, videos, emails, texts, eyewitness accounts, and a lot of other evidence detailing a variety of serious crimes ranging from sex trafficking, drug use, illegal gun possession, money laundering, tax fraud, FARA violations. Hunter Biden has never been the subject of an FBI raid. And let's not forget all the information that implicates his cognitive mess of a father, Joe, as a liar, lied to the American people. I never once talked to my son, not once, about his foreign business dealing. We now know that that is completely false, not true. We know of at least 14, maybe as many as 17 instances. We even have pictures of Hunter and his foreign business partners with Joe Biden. That would mean that the Biden family and the Biden presidency in particular, that our president could be compromised by Russia, China, Ukraine, and other countries, countries that were paying his son with no experience a whole lot of money. It would explain Joe's preferential treatment to countries like Russia and China. But the Biden's vacation, it's not going to be interrupted with any search warrant. It's not clear that Hunter or Joe will ever be charged with a crime. If I had to bet, they'll get away with it like the Clintons. They'll get away with it, you know, like every other deep state actor. You know, Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page. Remember all those names? How many people were held accountable for lying on a FISA application to get a warrant to spy on a sitting president? Now, we get the message. In today's America, if you are a Democrat, you can smoke crack on camera. You can record yourself with foreign prostitutes. You can skip out on paying your taxes. And you can even sell your country to the highest bidder. And you'll get away with all of it. You're above the law. Now, you can kick back. You'll take in tons of money. And thanks to your vice president father, and get daddy, your VP, to withhold even $1 billion taxpayer dollars to get some Ukrainian prosecutor fired for investigating the millions that you were paid with because you had no experience. Well, that's the reason to get paid all those millions. But if you're Donald Trump and you comply with the bureaucrats at the National Archives, as we have letters from the National Archives from February show, as we know they met on June 3rd, you still have 40 well-armed FBI agents, guns drawn, banging on your front door, unannounced, blowing open your brand new safe. But according to the media mob, this wasn't a raid. You see, this is the problem with conservatives. You thought that was a raid. This is only a routine government-approved visit from the feds. Take a look.
The former president talking about a raid and a break-in, that's not what happened.
We have to be careful not to adopt the term raid that was an intentional use of a word, and we haven't done it all night.
And a quick, but I want to say important note for our audience. We keep hearing a lot of people call what the FBI did at Mar-a-Lago a raid. But for fact's sake, here's the deal. Law enforcement doesn't even use the term raid.
The only reason you'd have a search like this, and let's be polite and call it a search and not a raid.
Trump's describing it as a raid. You know, officials I'm talking to are pushing back on that.
What we know about what played out on Monday is that it wasn't the sort of thing that you would call a raid where FBI agents go in guns blazing, knocking on doors, yelling.
This is not an unauthorized raid. It was a search conducted pursuant to a lawfully authorized warrant.
The fact is that this was a very orderly search of the property. It was not a raid.
It was a raid. This is the same media that spread Hillary Rodham Clinton's Russian dossier and the same media that lied and sent Hunter's laptop. That's Russian disinformation. The same media that lies again and again and again, and they don't stop. It wasn't really a raid, really? And according to Joe Biden's Attorney General Merrick Garland, the administration cares so deeply about equal application of our laws. Oh, okay. Then I guess Hunter and Joe are going to expect a visit in the early morning hours in Kiowa in South Carolina this weekend. Take a look.
Faithful adherence to the rule of law is the bedrock principle of the Justice Department and of our democracy. Upholding the rule of law means applying the law evenly, without fear or favor. Under my watch, that is precisely what the Justice Department is doing. All Americans are entitled to the even-handed application of the law, to due process of the law, and to the presumption of innocence.
Yeah, well, you've had Hunter's laptop for almost 2 years. Actions speak louder than words. I think you're a lying hypocrite. Obama took 30 million pages of sensitive, potentially classified presidential material to Chicago. Not one page has ever been returned. Where's the raid of Obama's house? Bill Clinton took a ton of items from the White House when he left. One of his top aides even tried to steal classified material from the National Archives, went into the National Archives, shoved it down his pants and in his socks. Where's the raid on Bill Clinton's house? His wife, Hillary, as you all know, stored thousands and thousands of government emails and classified documents on private servers that were hacked by outside forces. Where's the raid on her house in Chappaqua or wherever they happen to live? Apparently charging Hillary with a crime was unthinkable, according to Jim Comey, your former FBI director. Good old Jim. Superior Jim. Take a look.
Ace. Given the importance of the matter, I think unusual transparency is in order. Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case.
She broke the law, but no reasonable prosecutor. Why let the prosecutor decide for themselves? Keep in mind, and this is important, unlike Hillary Clinton, who tried to destroy evidence, Donald Trump was complying with federal officials prior to the raid, and he already handed over multiple boxes, as many as 15. And as of June 3rd, the FBI and DOJ, they were at Mar-a-Lago. The National Archives noted his cooperation in a statement back in February. The former president met with these federal officials from the DOJ and other agencies in June. He showed them the rest of the documents. They asked him to put a padlock on the door, securing the documents at their request. And he also said, come back for whatever you need, anytime you need to. But because his last name is Donald Trump, not Biden, not Obama, not Clinton, not Hunter, it just wasn't enough. So the FBI went judge shopping. They found the perfect guy, a compromised Obama donor, Trump hater on social media, to rubber stamp their absurd warrant and then rolled up at Mar-a-Lago in force. And now, according to my sources, despite demands from the FBI to turn all the security cameras at the residence off, apparently those cameras kept rolling. Now, those who have seen the footage tell us that the FBI did not act in good faith. Apparently, agents went room to room. Many had guns drawn, scouring anything and everything in sight. And they even searched rooms not listed on the warrant. Why were they going through Melania's pockets of her wardrobe? Make no mistake. If and when
We get this footage. We'll show it to you in full and let you decide. The FBI doesn't want anyone to see it. Apparently, they want all the copies for themselves. They're attempting to seize these recordings and cover their tracks. And today, Merrick Garland provided few details about the search. He took no questions that he should have taken, but he vehemently defended the DOJ and the FBI. Take a look.
Let me address recent unfounded attacks on the professionalism of the FBI and Justice Department agents and prosecutors. I will not stand by silently when their integrity is unfairly attacked. The men and women of the FBI and the Justice Department are dedicated, patriotic public servants. Every day, they protect the American people from violent crime, terrorism, and other threats to their safety while safeguarding our civil rights. They do so at great personal sacrifice and risk to themselves. I am honored to work alongside them.
I agree. 95% of FBI agents, they are good, honest, hardworking members of the law enforcement community. I agree that all officers deserve to be safe and protected. Bad apples need to be fired and or indicted. There is never any reason for any violence against any law enforcement officer ever under any circumstances. It can never be tolerated. As we said repeatedly in the summer of 2020, I don't remember many Democrats doing that. Oh, Kamala Harris was supporting them, and many Democrats were either silent or complicit. Giving out, you know, bail fund addresses, et cetera. Merrick Garland, let me give you some reasons why no one trusts your department or the FBI when it comes to Donald Trump. Your FBI, your DOJ, illegally obtained FISA warrants and three separate renewals to spy on the Trump campaign, the Trump transition team, and Trump as president. And you use his opponent, Hillary Clinton's dirty, bought and paid for Russian dossier as evidence and lied to a FISA court judge and said it was verified, and we know it's unverifiable. DOJ official Bruce Orr warned that the dossier was garbage back in August of 2016. He said it was unsourced, unverifiable, Russian disinformation put together by an ex-foreign spy at the request of the Clinton campaign. You were warned ahead of time. The ex-foreign spy, Christopher Steele, even noted under oath that the material in the dossier was unverifiable, but the FBI and DOJ didn't care, and none of those people were held accountable. Next, they went on a two-year partisan witch hunt led by devout Democrat Andrew Weissman and staff with Clinton donors. Director Ray never held one of those people accountable. He made no institutional changes, no reforms at all, and this is where we are today. And that's why people don't trust this once great law institution, and that is the FBI. The Justice Department, by the way, just labeled concerned parents speaking out at school board meetings as potential domestic terrorists that may need to be investigated at the request of the Democrats. They have also seemingly ignored the dozens of attacks on pro-life pregnancy centers. They declined to prosecute violent far-left rioters who attacked federal buildings in the summer of 2020. That courthouse in Portland, thousands of cops injured, dozens of Americans dead. They did nothing to stop the doxing and harassment of Supreme Court justices, even though we have a law against that, prohibiting that. They barely yawned when Chuck Schumer threatened these same justices by name on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court. They couldn't care less when Kamala Harris promoted that bail fund to get rioters out of jail and told them not to stop rioting. Take note. They're not going to stop. They won't stop. They shouldn't stop. We won't stop. And now they don't seem to care at all that the disgusting, frankly, Biden family literally sold access to the highest levels of the U.S. government, China, Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan. Attorney General Garland, you've had Hunter's laptop for 2 years. You talk about equal justice, equal application of our laws. Where is it?
2019 has had that Hunter Biden laptop, and the Justice Department knew about it then at that time too. And this was during the Trump administration. Barr and many of these people, they stonewalled Trump, and they were all together with the rhinos to get rid of Trump because they didn't want him back in there in 2020 to win. But here we go next with predictive programming. Jay Dyer, he's going to close out this first hour with some very insightful things about predictive programming. Here we go with Jay Dyer.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Today we're going to be talking about a question that I get asked all the time, which I don't think we've really covered in depth here in the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show, and that is the issue of predictive programming. Why and how is it that so many fiction shows, books, movies predict with seemingly precise, amazing detail future events? Is this some sort of mystical occult thing? Is it a spy thing where agencies are introducing these? Is it a Pentagon directed propaganda operation? Is it just artists who want to get the word out? Is it a sort of intuition that people in the arts have, perhaps? Well, today I'm going to give several examples of this, and I'm going to give you my thesis and why I wrote two books on this that help explain how this key element of propaganda actually works. So we're going to work through about 10 examples that are not easy to explain away or to dismiss when it comes to fiction predicting things sometimes 10, 20 years ahead of time with precise detail. So what is exactly this idea of predictive programming? Is it merely propaganda? I think propaganda is a huge element of this. That's really the key to unlocking how this works and to explaining why this occurs. It may not explain everything, but it's the key to explaining it. And I'm going to show you through a lot of research and through a lot of academic studies that there's a real element to this. This is a real domain of research in terms of psychological warfare. It has a pretty lengthy history behind it, at least 100 years or so, going back to the British Empire, going back to early studies and propaganda, and the realization that fiction had a much more powerful impact on people than did fact, than did news, than did dry reporting of the events. So if we think about some examples, well, we'll get to the examples in a second, but I want to point out a couple books that have been written that actually do talk about this that aren't conspiracy texts. So these are texts that come out of mainline academia that will help to give us a grounding for why I take the approach that I do. One is a book called Trisha Jenkins' book, The CIA in Hollywood. And she's was a University of Texas professor, I believe. But this book is published by UT. And she goes into great detail in many chapters talking about this liaison relationship between the CIA and Hollywood. Figures like Chase Brandon, Milt Bearden, who consulted on many, many films and helped to give a kind of an understanding of what the agency and other government agencies wanted portrayed in those films. Another book that covered this was the academic work Operation Hollywood by David Robb. And so this is going to, I think, give us a real key into understanding what exactly predictive programming is and how it works. This is the Alex Jones Show. Don't go anywhere. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. We're covering this topic of propaganda, psychological warfare, and what's sometimes called predictive programming. What is it? How does it work? Why does it seem to at times predict the future? And I'd mentioned a couple books that many years ago were written in the academic sphere that kind of gave a little bit of a window into a key for unlocking how this works and why it goes on. And by the way, since these books have come out, this one was 2004, the Operation Hollywood book. This book detailed how many times there had been censorship on the part of military and Pentagon agencies that were liaisons between Hollywood and the filmmakers. And what we see is that a long, long list of films at that time were known to have been consulted on, changed, censored, and so forth. And the way it worked at that time, what people understood was, well, if you want to use the tanks, if you want to use the aircraft carriers in the back of your movie or whatever in the background, you're going to need to alter the scripts to give this or that message in the film. And it wasn't just military-related films, though. It would actually be all kinds of films that you wouldn't expect. For example, the Bond films were censored a couple times. Tomorrow Never Dies, GoldenEye, Clear and Present Danger, 13 Days, The Perfect Storm, Wind Talkers, Independence Day, G.I. Joe, Jurassic Park 2, Forrest Gump, Black Hawk Down, Pearl Harbor, Armageddon, Top Gun, Crimson Tide, Air Force One, all of these especially big blockbuster military films, and particularly films like Pearl Harbor that came out right before the big 9 event, right? And those would be very crucial, so films like True Lies as well, to prepare us for the war on terror narrative that had already been planned and already been cooked up years before, especially by the neocons. We have films like Failsafe, Mars Attacks, Outbreak, Space Cowboys, General's Daughter, Sergeant Bilko, Lone Star, Broken Arrow, Pentagon Wars, Fields of Fire, on and on. I can keep going. Star Trek IV, The Presidio, The Right Stuff, Top Gun, obvious ones, right, that we would expect were consulted on, censored, changed, and altered, because they wanted to have the message at that time that the military wanted, or that the deep state, I think, wanted in a lot of these films. Now, I'm not saying that everybody was involved in a giant plot. That's just part of the propaganda element and function that Hollywood served. In fact, the father of modern propaganda, Edward Bernays, wrote in his propaganda books that Hollywood is the greatest tool of propaganda the world has ever seen. And so we can begin to see that, okay, so there is a clear connection between these entities. And, you know, shows like Alias, J.J. Abrams' Alias, we know that the CIA had a direct consultation relationship on that set. We know that, for example, after the series, Jennifer Garner went to work for the CIA publicly as a kind of propaganda recruitment face of the agency, so to speak, through the fiction. So there's always been this deep relationship. But how deep does it go? How intense is that relationship? How far back does it go? When I was studying the history of propaganda and the history of spy fiction, one of the things I came across was British spy fiction. And if you look at the history of British spy writers, one of the key things that came to the fore here was that a lot of the people who wrote spy fiction were spies. They worked for secret intelligence. They worked for MI5, MI6. They worked for these agencies and had seen quite a bit from that inside world, and then wrote about it in fiction. And so fiction writers then, they ended up revealing more than you would have gotten in the news. And the reason for that is in the UK, they had the Official Secrets Act, which would prevent them from, you know, publicly just writing a big expose about, British intelligence or whatever. So they would write it into their fiction. And so we see famous spies, you know, writing their accounts, writing their biographies, people like Graham Greene. People like, as we said, the most famous example, Ian Fleming, of course, that ties directly into Hollywood and how so many of the Bond operations are in a loose sense based on real things that occurred. And, I was just listening to Alex's broadcast yesterday when he came on with Owen, and he was talking about, you know, Ian Fleming had seen this whole world of people just like Klaus, and people thought, oh, you know, Blofeld and these characters, they're fiction. They're not fiction. They're actually based on people that Ian Fleming was hanging around with, people that he met. And some of these billionaires, for example, Aristotle Onassis, he wanted to fund the first Bond film. He wanted to fund Dr. No. That didn't end up happening, but because Ian Fleming was in those circles, and Ian Fleming himself came from a prominent British Scottish banking family, he had seen a lot of this world from the inside out. He went to I think Eton or one of the important universities in the UK, and so the recruitment began for him at college, and a lot of the people that he spent time with, other famous spies, Maxwell Knight, Dennis Wheatley, also wrote famous spy fiction novels. Well, in the case of Wheatley, he wrote occult spy fiction novels, and he would base some of his villains on the characters Aleister Crowley, the famous Satanist, as did Ian Fleming, basing Le Chiffre and Blofeld in part on Crowley. So the point of all that is just to say that, again, when you get into the history of spy fiction, you start to realize, hey, how come so many spies go on to write fiction? I mean, think about Eric Blair, George Orwell. He was a person who saw the inside of both a socialist and secret police and British intelligence, right? And he saw that a lot of this is really a bunch of baloney. This dialectical game that's being played is kind of a bunch of baloney. And so as I was reading about spy fiction, I started realizing, how come all these people go and write not just fiction, but they write screenplays? So this is a key way to see why it is this way. The solution, the answer to why so many movies predict so many things, is because people from the intelligence world go and write screenplays and they write novels. There's mainline writers that write about this. There's a book by a guy who is a former CIA bureaucrat, Frederick Hitz. He wrote a book called The Great Game, The Myths and the Reality of Espionage. And the whole book is just about picking out of the spy fiction and the spy stories and movies the realities and how much reality there is in those things. But we can't just rely on the fiction, of course, because not everybody who's writing these is writing them for some altruistic, noble purpose. They might be writing to make a buck. They might be writing to get things out. Or they might be writing for propaganda purposes. Do you know there's actually a movie that is based around this theme? Robert Redford is in a film called 3 Days of the Condor, which I recommend watching if you've never seen it, because his job for the CIA in that film is to read spy fiction, to read novels, to look for messages that were put into the fiction. And, of course, the story is that he gets framed for some scandal or whatever, and Donald Sutherland ends up, you know, trying to track him down and kill him throughout the whole movie. So, but it's a revealing movie because it really gets into a lot of what I'm talking about. But those are just, you know, fiction examples that we see where the spy world intertwines with Hollywood and whatnot, all well known. But let's keep in mind that it's not just occult or spy fiction. It's also science fiction. And so people like H.G. Wells, who I've covered for many, many years, and we've read a large portion of his writings, you know, Wells was the propagandist par excellence of his day. He's kind of the Edward Bernays prior to Edward Bernays. And he really pioneered a lot of techniques in propaganda and this this idea of using mass pop sci-fi as a tool of propaganda. So when we read his books, we start to realize, hey, wait a minute, genetic manipulation? Geoengineering, that's actually something that he wrote about in at the turn of the century, right? In famous books like Island of Dr. Moreau, he predicts that genetic modification would lead to an entirely new world. And so this Island of Dr. Moreau is kind of a microcosm of what he sees the future world existing as. Now, I'm not a big fan of H.G. Wells because he was a full-on, straight-up Illuminist. He was a high-level a socialist Marxist Mason who worked for the Royal Society as a fake leftist. But that's the vision that he has for the future world, as we've covered in many of his works. Don't go anywhere. This is Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis, the Alex Jones Show.
I don't care if you work in a cafeteria or pump gas or whether you're a farmer, a rancher, a doctor, a lawyer, or a millionaire. Fortune and Money Magazine have all done these profiles. You see it every year. 30 different tax returns, 30 different answers. 50 different tax returns, 50 different answers. And almost all of them just screw you over, especially the big firms and the big tax groups, because they're part of the system and they don't want the general public understanding this and knowing this. So it's a very important situation with inflation and all the things out there hurting everybody to be able to do things tax-wise that's legal and lawful that allows you to keep more of your money. We wouldn't even be here if I hadn't gotten great tax advice in the last few years. The only way you fail is not writing down the URL, JonesTaxRelief.com, one word, JonesTaxRelief.com, or call 833-900-4285, 833-900-4285.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I want to remind you this is a crucial time, and be sure to head over to the InfoWars store and support Alex, support the crew by getting those absolutely necessary products, especially check out Alex's new book. I can't wait to get a copy of that, you know, studying the Great Reset for many, many years and, you know, getting a kind of a condensed version of Alex's wisdom on that subject. It's an absolute necessity. So I'll probably be doing a book report on that book, especially the signed copy that I intend to get. So be sure and get a signed copy of that. If you want to get into the real nitty gritty of what the Great Reset is all about. So we're working through the examples of British propagandists and fiction writers who had an insight into the real plans of the elite that they put into fiction. And I can't forget, two of the greatest examples of the 20th century, two of the top writers of the 20th century who literally vindicate everything that you hear Alex talk about, everything you've heard me talk about, everything that the guests and the host at InfoWars talk about, which is this technocratic New World Order plan that was literally predicted in Tolkien's Lord of the Rings trilogy. And we know that because C.S. Lewis, his close buddy for many years, wrote a separate